Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, and joining us in studio, as mentioned, one Tre'Davious White, as he is here for stint number two in Buffalo. I'm sure your phone blew up when that first happened, like, because there is a special affinity in Bills fans' hearts for one Tre'Davious White. I'm sure you felt that right off the jump when everything went down, right?
Oh, for sure. I knew immediately once the news broke that pretty much, you know, my phone was going to go crazy with family members, friends, old teammates. Just the love that I got over the first few days, it was just something that, you know, that I'll never forget. Obviously, it was something that I wanted. I wanted to come back here, you know, in the back end of my career and do it with people that I really legitimately care about mm-hmm. and have genuine relationships with as friends off the field. So,
Famously, you get back in, and the quarterback didn't know they'd re-sign you, so he sees you strutting mm-hmm. through the locker room. He's like, how yeah. does that happen?
He's been a little off the grid.
Listen, you got to tip your hat to Josh for, like, disconnecting. Because you got to be completely off the radar not to know the Bills signed Tre'Davious back.
Oh, it was good. But look, so he saw me in the locker room. He's like, how you doing? It's just like, he was just so surprised. So Jeff told me that he came over to him. He's like, did we really sign Trey back? Yeah, Jeff's like, yeah, you're a samurai. So I saw him in brotherly hug.
Oh, yeah.
It was so missed him a lot, you know what I mean? Just being on the other side, obviously. Just seeing the success that he had last year, being an MVP.
Sure.
Yeah, man. I mean, I saw the big hug you guys shared on the field before the playoff game last mm-hmm. year. Pre-game, you're coming out here with the Ravens, and, like, it's just – like, you could just – like, you know when you see hugs and they look like the – for lack of a better term, half-ass hug, like, I'm just doing this to be nice. That was not that. That mm-hmm. was, like, genuine love. Like, you could just see it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think that's part of the reason you wanted to be back here, right? Because that exists here in plentiful supply.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, I'm not the first person that says this. And not going to be the last. This is a special place, man. And obviously, you want to play, like I said before, a few weeks ago, my goal was to always play under one team
sure.
and do it at a high level, but that plan didn't go as I wanted to go, out of my control because of injuries, but I got a chance to rewrite it, and I'm going to do it the right way this way around.
And, you know, because I played on a couple different teams as well, but there are a lot of guys in L.A., Baltimore, that you got a lot of love and respect for. Kind of compare and contrast. There's good organizations all mm-hmm. around the league. Not all of them, but there's a handful, right? More than a handful. And you got a chance to play for some pretty respected organizations. in LA and, of course, in Baltimore, who has been competitive ever since Harbaugh got there, right? Give us a little compare and contrast about what players say about Buffalo away from Buffalo, and some of the stuff you can share with us about what it's like to go away, have some success, go to another team, be in a playoff atmosphere, and, you know, then make it back here.
Well, I'll be completely honest. Everything was so foreign to me, just, you know, leaving this place, because I'm such a routine-based guy. So it's like, I have all my people in place. I have my chiropractor. I have my massage therapy. I have, you know, my trainers, just everything at my disposal that I've created over the first 7 years of my career. Like, those are things that, if I'm not, I get bad anxiety when that schedule is not on this track
it's not set.
So once I go to a new place, I got to figure out all this out. I got to find new people. Find new people I trust, because I'm very particular about that. So you got to find people you trust. And then it just, I could never get in the group. Then I was rehabbing, trying to get, learning a new defense, going into a defensive system. Well, I'm talking about LA. Going into a system where it's like, it's the DC's first shot at being a DC. He's trying to find the calls. He's trying to find what works for the group. And then it's a young defense. And then I'm coming off this injury. I can't give them what they need me to give them, because I'm trying to find myself and get myself back too. So that LA experience, as far as like on the field, it wasn't a time, because I feel like I just couldn't give that group. Yeah. It was a young group. I couldn't give them that veteran presence that I needed, because I was so busy rehabbing, working by myself, and not going out there and getting as many reps as I could, because I'm just trying to rehab this thing, trying to manage it, push it a little bit, but still manage it. So that wasn't, but as far as off the field, just like around the building, just the people there, great. Everything was great. The experience, everything was great. I was able to, you know, go to a different organization, see how they run things, and just see different players, go into a different locker room and see just like how other people, the dynamic on a day-to-day basis, how the players interact with each other and stuff like that. And then getting to Baltimore, it was just more of the same. Like, it's just like it's a real strict environment in Baltimore. Like, they practice really hard. Like, Harbaugh is really, it's like, it's going to be this one way, and we're going to do it, and we're going to do it this every day, and it's going, we're going to hammer it, and we're going to practice at it. And, you know, it gave me an appreciation for just like the process, because I've learned, like, okay, this team does it this way, this team does it this way, and the Bills did it this way, but it's more than one way to skin a cat, because obviously LA doing it right. They've been in two Super Bowls and won one, and Baltimore has always been competitive. In Buffalo, we've come along over the years, so now we here too, so it's different ways, but I was just so used to the way that we did it here that it was hard for me to get that out of my head.
To reprogram.
It was so hard.
Where your comparison comes from. If you knew how successful you were personally here in Buffalo, you think, okay, how does it compare? Both L.A. and Baltimore, this was your first comparison.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously it was great for me, because a lot of guys that I respected over the time of me playing in this league, playing against in college, I was able to go in the locker room with them and see how they do the things on a day-to-day basis. Other great players, Matthew Stafford, Cooper Kupp, we can go Baltimore, Lamar Jackson, Marlon Humphreys, Derrick Henry, Zay Flowers. You could just keep going. Kyle Van Noy, Roquan Smith. It's just so many great players. So it was just like I was able to just go and observe and see, like, okay, this guy, like, this, if you want to do it, the be great at this, like, you see Roquan Smith, he knows everything about the whole offense. He's calling out plays on the field. So it's just like, I'm seeing, like, greatness. And it's just like, okay, what can I do? Take a little bit from this guy. Even though I've been in the league a long time and I have but I can never stop learning.
All right. So last one for you here, because Brandon Bean mentioned this, so did Coach McDermott. They, you know, just based on watching your tape towards the end of last season, they felt that you kind of cleared that rehab hurdle. So, and a lot of times it takes guys like a full year to kind of get back into the groove, like you were just mm-hmm. talking about. Like, it was hard for you to find that mm-hmm. groove where you were just playing and only worrying about playing. Mm-hmm. So do you feel that that hurdle was cleared? Like, do you feel coming into this, you know, spring and training camp and preseason that you're in a place where you're just focused on playing? You're not worried so much about managing all the things that were part of your rehab plan.
Oh, for sure. I was telling this to Taryn, a couple of my teammates. You know, Taryn and Dane and I, we talk right. a lot. Like, we really talk. So this is the first off season that I have where I'm not worried about rehabbing my knee, my Achilles. Like, this is the first time in maybe since 4 years.
Yeah.
Where I could just focus on my body and not focus on one thing. And it's just taking me away from getting reps with my teammates. Just going out there doing the walkthroughs. I'm not in the training room, just on the table, just getting rubbed on and just doing stuff for this one particular part. I can work on the whole thing. So now I know what a full off season looks like for me. I know when I put the work in, I'm able to do the things that I want to do as far as like my off season program, going back to the basics.
Yeah,
I'm able to do that now. Feel good. It's going to be a great year.
That's awesome. Hopefully it'll be a less chaotic year than you experienced last year, because you're bumping around from L.A. To Baltimore.
Yep.
And you're back home and spread your wings, man. It'd be great to see you out there.
Oh, it's going to be great. Just me getting back, just walking through those doors, man, like my appreciation level is on another level. Just seeing familiar faces and people that embrace me as much as I embrace them when I see them is just something that I don't take lightly. No,
the feeling is mutual. It's great to have you back. We are unfortunately out of time. We can talk to you all afternoon, but we do have to take a break here. So Trey, thanks for stopping by.
We'll anytime.
Keeping a close eye out there on the field. Good luck to you in terms of putting it all together. That's Tre'Davious White joining us here on One Bills Live.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Good morning. It's time to talk some hockey. Changing gears now, talking with Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Jody Biasi, Sal Capaccio, Jeremy White is off this week. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, guys. How are you?
I'm good. We're good. Good to talk. Good to chat again. There's a lot has happened in hockey, I feel like, since we last talked.
It was a crazy day of hockey. They all the games were happening kind of at the same time.
Yeah.
They were, you know, different times in the afternoon, but basically going the same time. So I didn't really actually get to see much of the NHL game just because of the gold medal game and the Amherst game.
Yeah. Also, what is the NHL doing putting Stars Oilers on in the middle of the afternoon on a weekend? I was excited to watch that game on my flight, and then I realized it was at 4 o'clock. I'm like, oh, I'm not doing that. Where do you want to start, Paul? Do you want to start with Tage Thompson scoring the golden goal for Team USA? They win a tournament, the World Championships, they hadn't won since the 1930s. And really what it does for him, because we're actually going to talk to Stephen Ellis from the Daily Faceoff a little later this morning, and he wrote that Thompson was like willing to hit everything that tournament. He played well defensively. He obviously scored a bunch of goals and was creating shots, so that, you know, if we're thinking about his Olympic candidacy, I don't feel like he could have had a better tournament.
Yeah, and even before he scored the goal, I mean, he hadn't scored in 3 games, I believe it was, but I didn't hate his game, you know, in those 3 games. I wouldn't say he was playing poorly. He was playing a team game is what he was doing. I mean, he was playing the game that the coaching staff was asking Team USA to play to try to win a tournament. So there were times where it was like, instead of trying a high wire act or trying to maybe stick handle through a couple of guys, or, you know, it was like, all right, let's put the puck in the place where it needs to be put, and let's live for another day type of a thing. And, you know, he was doing that. And there was one play he made I really liked. He had turned the puck over in the offensive zone, but he just put his head down and hightailed it back. And he got back, and he was the one that got back to break up the play. It's like, okay, you made a mistake. Everybody's going to make a mistake in a hockey game. That's what hockey games are. But he did everything he could to correct that mistake, and he did, and made a really nice defensive play getting back to break up the rush and then was able to counter the other way. So I really liked the team game that he was playing. And by the end of the tournament, he did score 2 overtime goals. He did score 6 goals. He had 9 points in 10 games. And, you know, so I even without the overtime goal, the golden goal, mm-hmm. I would still be sitting here telling you that I think he should make the Olympic team.
Yeah. There was one reason that was cited, maybe even by Bill Guerin directly. You should find exactly where. But what was cited was that one reason he didn't make the Four Nations team, Paul, or one thing that, you know, USA Hockey wonders about him is, does he have any big game experience? Because he doesn't really have a lot of that from the Sabres. I don't know if they would consider that, you know, big game experience, but, I mean, it's a championship game, and you needed a guy to do it, and he went down the ice and he scored. So if that was the thing keeping him off a Team USA, I don't know that it still would. Really, would you also predict that as long as there is an injury or, you know, some unforeseen terrible start to next season, that he is actually going to make the team, Team USA at the Olympics?
No, I think he should. Now, I don't trust Guerin or Drury because they got to put their guys on first. So you got to have the Minnesota Wild and New York Rangers on the team. And that's where I think it came off the rails for guys like Thompson and some others. Look at the top 7 American goal scorers last year. I believe, and Tuck was one of them, I believe 2 of them made the Four Nations tournament.
that's unbelievable.
Of the top 7 goal scorers. And Tage Thompson was number 1 at 44 goals. And go back to the 47-goal year. Mm-hmm. From that point, 2022, until now, Tage Thompson is the 2nd leading U.S. goal scorer behind Austin Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just he had 1 year where he was up in the top. He has been since the year he scored 47. True, he didn't have big game experience, and I think that's only going to help him with the Sabres too, because he in an interview afterwards said, I had never won anything, in the NHL. And, you know, he's been around 7 years now, so he's been around for half the drought. And mm-hmm. Now you could just watching him, the whole celebration, you know, is almost like a weight had been lifted off of him. It's like now he knows what it's like to win something. Now, winning the gold medal at the World Championship is not like winning the Stanley Cup. It's not even winning the gold medal at the Olympics, but it is something. It is an accomplishment. I mean, you look at Team USA, beforehand you wouldn't say, well, that's the best team. You know, they were good. But, again, Guerin wanted players to show up, and some didn't. Now, if you're a restricted free agent or something like that, of course you're not going to show up. That's why J.J. Paterka wasn't there for Germany, because he's a restricted free agent, and mm-hmm. if you don't have a contract, you're not going. But still, there were still a lot of guys, and so many guys went over there. They were rushing over there after they got eliminated in the playoffs. McKinnon rushed over there. You know, half the New Jersey Devils team rushed over there. Even Nylander showed up. You know, after the Leafs, they got eliminated late. He only got in 2 games, but he went over there to earn 3 games. I'm sorry. He went over there too. I mean, so many guys went over there, but Team USA hardly had anybody that went over there. And after they got eliminated, it's just that's one of the reasons nobody had won that tournament for Team USA since 1933 is because of that point. They have trouble getting people over there for that tournament, and for whatever the reason is, where other nations don't necessarily have that problem. And Guerin was disappointed that very few went over there, and I think he appreciated the fact that Thompson did. And Thompson told me before he left, we talked about it before the Sabres season ended, he was going there to prove a point, and I think he did it.
All right, Paul, so Rochester American season is over. They lose in 5 to Laval.
So everything with the Sabres organization is done now as far as on the ice. The Sabres are done. The Amerks are done. What's the next order of business? You have several RFAs, obviously. You have the Bo Byram situation hanging out there. You have the draft coming up. What's the order of business here for Kevin Adams, his coaching staff? I don't even think we've heard anything official about the coaching staff or the organization even. So what can fans look for next and what needs to happen next?
Yeah, I mean, as far as we know, nothing has happened with the coaching staff. They still haven't, at least maybe they have hired somebody, but they haven't announced it or anything for the front office. So the, you know, they have to continue to try to find that person for the front office, or at least get that squared away. We don't know if they're looking for coaches or they aren't. There really hasn't been anything said or even indicated that coaches are leaving or you know, they're with the coaching staff. I mean, they're not going to announce that, well, we're not firing our coaching staff.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's you know, you just kind of wait and see. I mean, next time Adams will speak is around the draft, you know, which is at the end of June. So that would probably be the next time that we would get a chance to speak with him about that particular thing. They've got the you know, they're preparing for the draft. They, you know, they got to get qualifying offers out to their restricted free agents, and I don't think there's anybody restricted that they have that they will not qualify. That happens just, you know, as in between the draft and when the season ends, that with the qualifying offers will be out there. And, you know, they're, of course, looking for trades. I'm sure Kevin Adams has been been talking about trades since then, because that's when trades start happening, is once the Stanley Cup playoffs end and you get in towards the draft and you know, free agency and those types of events that happen during the summertime. That's, you know, when all of a sudden you'll start seeing some trades also.
Quickly on restricted free agency, Paul. We'll spend much of the time, I'm sure, on other guys, but Devin Levi's season comes to an end in Rochester. We've talked about him and what we think will happen to him next season, whether he'll be one of the two goalies in Buffalo. He had a tough series against Laval, .861 save percentage. Not every goal was his fault, but maybe even he would say there were a few that he would like back. Did that series, giving up five goals in the elimination game, did any of those games in that series change your thought on where he'll be or where he should be to start next season?
Well, yes. Now, Laval is the number one team in the American Hockey League. They're better than Syracuse. Levi was lights out against Syracuse, gave up two goals in three games. But he gave up 18 goals in five games against Laval. And the two wins, he was one of the reasons. I mean, he really played well in game four to be able to force a game five, as did his team. I don't think the team played as well in front of him either. One of the things about the Amerk team all year long is the way they play team defense. And Levi didn't have to stand on his head a lot of the time. But that, especially in game five, they hung him. I mean, they just didn't play well at all in front of him, and he wasn't up to it as far as making a big save at the big time. And that was what he did for most of the season. When they needed him to make a big save, he did. But he also wasn't all that busy a lot of the time, too, because of the great team defense that they played. So that went away also for him. But he didn't play as well. You're right, there were games he'd want back, and now for me there's question marks. I would not go in this season with two young goaltenders that are both you know, not, I mean, that last series against Levi showed me, is he ready for the NHL? Will he ever be ready for the NHL? I don't know. Or will he come and play well in training camp and be lights out and be a very good NHL goaltender? That could also happen.
Right. And then with Lukanen paired with him, it would be two big question marks.
Right. And Lukanen could get his game back from what he had at the end, right, not this past year, but the year before, where in 35 games he had some of the best numbers in the National Hockey League. That could happen too, but do you want it? Because if it doesn't happen and you got those two there and it doesn't happen, if one of them doesn't take the reins,
yep, that could sink your season.
take that number up to 15.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. It really could. If they both hit, it's possible, then you can make the playoffs on that. But if
one of them hits.
Yeah. But if they if they both don't, I mean, they could get their power play could improve and they could get better defensively even, and you just don't get the saves. That could sink your season.
You're right. You have to get saves. You have to have good goaltending if you're going to be a good team.
All right. Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. The Amherst season sadly comes to an end, and now, yeah, we'll look for free agency, and before that, of course, the NHL draft. And we'll talk more playoffs, too. So thanks, Paul, for joining, and we'll talk later this week.
Take care.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio, Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Welcome back. Bills have been on the field some this week. It was Tuesday when the media was allowed to be present. And we talked to Sal on Tuesday, among other things, about Elijah Moore, who we had a couple of sound bites from his conversation with Sal. And Sal today has posted more on Moore. That conversation and article up at WGR550.com. Sal, let's start there. So while we did get into him a little bit on Tuesday, this question came up yesterday between Bulldog and me. This year on the Bills, Elijah Moore is wide receiver what? Maybe that's not easy, but you deserve a crack at it.
Yeah, that depends how you define it. Is it what the stats are at the end of the season? Is it how often he's on the field? I think he's number 5 or 4, but I do think that could come with, you know, making critical plays and moments and being on the field in those times, right? I think he probably starts off as wide receiver number 5 with a chance to get to 4. I don't know if he could get to Josh Palmer's level, but Boy, I mean, I look back when I did this article and I talked to him, and then I went back and looked at his numbers and what he's been through the first 2 years and what he's still put up. I'm like, man, I give this guy a shot to kind of, you know, be right there in the mix to maybe being a guy that, you know, could really kind of contribute. I'll put it this way. I wrote this in the article. It's pretty amazing. You think about the quarterbacks that he has played with through 4 years of his NFL career. Here we go. Zach Wilson, Mike White, Joe Flacco twice, Josh Johnson, Chris Streveler, Deshaun Watson, PJ Walker, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Jeff Driscoll, Jameis Winston, and Bailey Zappi. And the guy still averaged over 500 yards a season. I think there's a chance here for something to happen.
Yeah. This is some downright Mike White slander, by the way.
And Deshaun Watson, by the way, belongs in that group. Like, this is not like this is the Deshaun Watson who completely derailed his entire life and career. So he was terrible, too. Not the good Houston Deshaun Watson, obviously. So, yeah, you know, him in the pecking order, when Mike asked me that, Sal, I went to the zoo on this question. I was like, I thought, you know, maybe he and Samuel have to battle it out, and like maybe one or the other is going to get, you know, a lot of snaps and be a prominent part of the offense, and maybe the other one will be more of a spare part, or maybe not even here, who knows? And then I looked at the depth chart and went, oh, wait a minute, really, the five guys are pretty clearly defined, including him, I'd say, you know, from a experience and like expectation standpoint even. But then you think about, well, wouldn't they want to keep a guy around who's more of a duplicate of a Coleman or a Palmer in case something happens, right? You can't have all guys that are predominantly slot speed guys in your receiving core, because if something goes wrong outside, you're going to need someone. So that's where, like, I don't know, a Jalen Virgil or someone that's a practice squad level guy maybe comes into play a little bit. So I wonder, like, we're always clamoring for more guys, so I don't want to thin the herd or anything, but from a type of player standpoint, I feel like Samuel and Moore are kind of duplicates.
Yeah, I think that their skill sets are similar in ways, but I think about how they could be used. I think the Bills really wanted to use Curtis Samuel in a really jack-of-all-trades type of way last year. It just never worked out. He had the injury early on, and I think if you're going to use a guy like that, you kind of have to have – he has to be involved more. He has to be on the field more, available more, got to have that chemistry. I don't see that with Moore. Now, you could use him in different roles like that. To me, Moore is more of a – down the field, we need a guy that can stretch it a little bit. He can play that slot role. I think you move Samuel around. Samuel's a converted running back. So I just think that even though you're right, like where are the targets, where are the numbers, right? You look at the targets. You can't just feed everybody. You just can't do that. Everybody eats, but you can't feed everybody. It's not going to work like that. Not everybody's going to be getting 10 targets a game. You know, it can't happen. But I mean, like, this is amazing when I think and look at the last year at the snap counts. Mac Hollins clearly had more snaps than anybody on the Bills roster by like 130 snaps. He cleared Keon Coleman's 721. The next closest was Keon Coleman at 598. That's 721 snaps that are available basically to the Bills this year, right? And now Curtis Samuel's going to hopefully have an uptick because of his, you know, because of his availability, hopefully. And then you bring in, there's no more Amari Cooper. He's not here anymore. So that's another 239 snaps, by the way, that he played. So I just think there's room here for these guys all to get on the field. I don't know. I think how you put the parts together and they play is going to be the question.
Is it the big reason for that disparity with Hollins that he would have been on the field for like all running plays, blocking? You know, like we'll talk to Rich Rebar next week. He's writing, maybe he writes the Bills chapter for Warren Sharp's book, and he was tweeting today about Kincaid and how he, you know, this is intuitive, like he's on the field for many fewer rushing plays than Knox is. So who's in that role, Sal, if I'm right about this, like who takes Hollins' place as the receiver that the Bills trust, you know, most of all in the run game?
It's a good question. I think Keon Coleman could be a guy that they could really like there. I think he did a nice job growing as a blocker last year. But he's not. You're going to rely on him to catch more passes. So I don't think you can kind of just pigeonhole him there, no doubt.
Yep.
You got to give him more opportunity there. Khalil Shakir obviously can block a little bit. He's not the biggest guy, but he understands. I think this is where a guy like Jackson Hawes comes into play as a tight end. It doesn't have to go to another wide receiver. Now you can free a guy like Dalton Kincaid up even more. You know, Dawson Knox doesn't have to have as much on his plate. And I think Jackson Hawes starts to come into play here, where maybe you can put him on the field a little bit more. And yeah, those 721 snaps don't have to be divided and go right to a wide receiver. If you're talking in the run game, now you have a guy who's eligible to catch passes, and maybe the way it works is you put a tight end on the field like Jackson Hawes, and now Dalton Kincaid's usage ticks up a little bit from the wide receiver point and spot where you can flex him out a little bit.
So Kincaid's, just sort of the progression here might be that Kincaid's targets go up, which I think we'd like. But I wonder if it might signify a change in philosophy. Mac Hollins is, you know, there's not a lot of players like him, I think, where he gives you a little bit. I mean, he led the league, led the team rather, not the league, in touchdown catches. But, you know, you have a sort of specific role for him. And I don't know who that, you know, you're talking about a guy that might end up being sort of a third tight end. He might end up being almost like a lineman who you can throw it to as a guy who kind of serves as somewhat of a replacement there. I wonder if it means in either direction, Sal, like you need in either direction, more power football or less, because not having Hollins makes for an interesting adjustment.
Yeah, if the Bills, I think, still want to lean into being a team that can really run the ball down your throat, right? And I know that, like, how that sounds. Not saying that they just want to be a team that's ground and pound, but we know that this is not a team that wants to just sit back and put Josh Allen in the pocket all day long. Yeah, that can really give you great results, but you know what else can and did last year? Running the football the way they did. And they did a really good job of that. And they see light boxes because they have Josh Allen. So why not take advantage of those light boxes? They're seeing teams that are playing nickel against them. They're seeing teams that are playing dime against them sometimes. Now you bring in a guy, another tight end like Jackson Hawes, and say, fine, you want to do that. We'll take advantage. We'll run a ball right at you. And then when you decide to creep guys up, you know, we'll be able to throw it. So I don't know if it's a change in philosophy. I think that maybe leaning more into the philosophy of, okay, instead of Alec Anderson, we have this guy, the tight end now, who can do the same thing. And oh, by the way, we can throw the ball when he's on the field a little bit. So yeah, it's interesting. I can't imagine. We had Joe Marino on today. We were talking in the morning show. You know, Joe brought up the number of passes for Josh Allen. Josh was under 500 attempts last year. Do you think he's going to have over 500 this year? I bet he's around the same this year, probably. I think it looks kind of the same.
Yeah. Sal, you know, let's hear a little bit more, if you're up for it, about your conversation with Moore. Because, you know, it's not a guy, you know, he showed up after the draft and there was, you know, all this hoopla about being, you know, going, choosing to, you know, attack mode the way he did about the receiver conversation. And then here comes Moore, and I think the idea might be growing on fans that he could be someone who has an impact. What did you take away from talking to him on Tuesday?
I took away the fact that he is self-aware about, I think there's his growth, right? This is a mental growth for a lot of people in any walk of life. Like, I mean, you think that, you know, you have this certain role and you're going to go in there and you're going to make a difference. It's all about you. And I think you have to learn in a lot of ways about being part of a team and how you fit in. And his response to me was really interesting when we talked about him being in New York and him being in Cleveland and how things kind of didn't go quite right for him in those particular, or in for the team and him together. They haven't had much team success. Now, Cleveland did make the playoffs his first year there, but obviously otherwise they haven't had a lot of team success. They won 3 games last year. The Jets have the longest playoff drought in the NFL right now. And he said, going to the right system, he said, I kind of slept on it, meaning when he was coming out of the draft, because I also told him, hey, there were a lot of people in Buffalo that wanted the Bills to draft you. He said, hey, I, you know, I can't choose that. But he said, thinking that it didn't abide is the word he used, meaning he said, maybe you got players and sometimes not the best systems who can't turn it around, but it does take all 11. It definitely takes all 11. And I just think that was, to me, like an awareness on his part saying, hey, mate, I have this skill set and that's great. But man, if I'm not in the right spot, that's not going to matter. And I got to have the right system around me and the quarterback and the people around me, because I think I bring something to the table that can flourish.
Well, maybe it goes without saying after all this, but I think he'll be one of the most interesting players to monitor in camp. Like there could be a real ceiling with him. If the sort of simple points about the quarterbacks he's played with, which, by the way, I mean, Sal, you're talking about some high first-round picks right there. Zach Wilson and Jameis Winston, a 101. But nonetheless, if it really is like sort of that simple, he's a guy that just hasn't really had his chance yet. He's young. Then, okay. I mean, I'd want to think he can go higher than wide receiver 4 on this team, even if that's right. But it's a question of like the team's commitment, which isn't massive. They already kind of had it built before he got here. And, you know, what kind of chance he gets. Maybe he's a guy in the preseason that plays a lot and, you know, has a chance to show that he's worth.
You know what's, what's interesting, Mike, is when you say, like, however you phrase it there, getting his shot. It's funny, like, he's put up decent numbers in this league. It's not like he's this, like, oh, my God, this guy has potential. It hasn't worked. I don't know. Andy Isabella, right? Andy Isabella's a second-round pick, and he comes in, and the Bills liked him coming out of the draft, right? But it really, whatever his numbers were in Arizona, they weren't second-round pick-worthy numbers.
That's right.
This is the 34th pick in the draft. This is the second-round pick. And no, he hasn't put up 1,000-yard seasons. He had over 600 yards 1 year, though. He's never had less than, like, 4-something. His numbers last year, amazing. When you put a comparison, I put this in the article. His targets last year would have led the Buffalo Bills. His catches and yards last year would have been second on the Buffalo Bills, a team that scored 30 points on offense per game. So I just think it's kind of really super interesting how, of course it matters that he's in Cleveland and it's a different team and he's playing with different guys on the depth chart. But those numbers don't stink, right? Those are good numbers in the NFL.
Yeah, what I think he's up against maybe is just there was so much, and I don't think it was just here. He was an intriguing idea for, I think, a lot of fans, and maybe that crosses over into fantasy, and he's never smashed. So if you thought he was going to be up here, and he never is, then, you know, the knee jerk is, oh, bust. But there's a vast middle area in there between bust and smash, right? And he's maybe been living in that middle area, just kind of a guy type numbers, and maybe there is still a smashable player in there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in New York there were some things I think that happened behind the scenes, locker room, like there's part of the reason why they traded him, whatever happened in New York. You know, so I think all of this has kind of gone into his career. And again, maturity-wise, right? Like, you hope and you think that, you know, you're going to come into a locker room that this is where culture comes in. Hey, we have a culture where this guy's going to come in. He's going to understand you're a part of this machine. Like, it's not about you. It's about this team. And you have the league MVP throwing you footballs. You don't like it. You can't handle it. Like, we'll find somebody else that we can put there because he's going to make everybody look really good. And I thought that was interesting. I ended with, you know, one of the quotes he gave me about when I asked him, what's the difference here? Like, you were there in New York. You were in Cleveland. You've seen it. Like, is there something that stands out? And right away he said, oh yeah, I've gone home and talked to my wife about this already. Like, he said, it's just the little things. He said, the respect that players show for the coaches when you're in team meetings, taking out your notebooks and writing things down and just paying attention. Now, he didn't say that didn't happen in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. He didn't say that didn't happen in New York, but there's an implication there, right? I think
sure.
in a lot of ways. And I just think that was like really interesting to listen to him talk about that.
Right, the peer pressure on teams that don't have that piece right might be to sort of treat it like detention. Whereas a team that's got that stuff right, the peer pressure is to pay attention and take notes and be ready if called on.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and I think that he, from my conversation with him, you know, I just think he's embracing this opportunity. And the overall point is, you know, he could have taken more guaranteed money to stay in Cleveland. He's betting on himself, and he said, I know what I can do, and this is going to pay off, and I'm here, and I'm going to show what I can do.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. I slipped a point in about Kincaid earlier. Again, it's Rich Rebar for Warren Sharp's publication, Lord Reeves on Twitter, if you want it, with some tweets about Kincaid today, breaking down his data. I think I saw second among tight ends in targets per route run. So when he's running a route, he got the ball plenty, or he had the ball thrown to him plenty. Much more down the field than his rookie year. That sounded right. You know, I think we would have guessed that. 2 for 11, Allen to Kincaid on, you know, deeper, intermediate to deeper shots. I think all of it is maybe about what we expected. it's the question now is like, all right, so what next for Kincaid? And maybe this goes back to what we were talking about already, but, you know, we've had a few things, Sal. We've had Brandon Bean making a comment about Kincaid's strength and then trying to clarify that later on. What do you think this year they want his role to be, and how does it end up?
Well, I think they want him to be a, you know, pass-catching tight end that they can rely on to throw in all situations, whether that's red zone, full field, get down the field. You know, I was a bit, like, kind of surprised, maybe even disappointed in his rookie year, how that wasn't, they didn't really come to fruition enough, right? I thought that that could be something that he could be a part of last year. And maybe it would have been a little bit if he didn't have, you know, the injuries. But, you know, the injuries were real. You know, you talk to people in the Bills organization, I will tell you, like, the injuries were real. And he is already dealing with a knee, and then he banged his knee when the Bills were in, was it?
Indianapolis, Indy. I think, yeah.
Yep, Indy, in that game where, you know, Josh overthrew him, he, you know, banged that knee, and he fought through it. Like, there were times, I think Brandon Bean made the comment of, like, he even played, you know, games where maybe, you know, in other situations or other people, they wouldn't have played, but he wanted to be out there, so he did. And, you know, we hear that about a lot of guys. We heard that about Gabe Davis a few years ago, playing through an injury, you know, throughout the season. But the injuries were real with Dalton Kincaid, and I think that they want him to be a guy that they can rely on to kind of, you know, be a mismatch against linebackers because he's too fast, or against DBs because he's a little bit bigger. And that's where the get stronger, get bigger, because you can be a matchup and teams are going to have to understand that we can throw the ball to you at any point.
Yeah, the catchable target rate was really shockingly low between he and Allen. And hopefully, Sal, that's another thing where the injuries played a part in that, because they just did not have a connection last year. Like, it was like at 54% or something, I think, which is just, for a quarterback of Allen's capability, that just really blew my mind that they missed that much.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was, guys. Maybe you do. There was a at the Combine. Do you remember at the Combine? There was an NFL writer. It might have been a fantasy writer. Maybe it was Matthew Berry, actually. I don't even remember if it was him. Somebody had tweeted out something, how they talked to a Bills source at the Combine.
Yes.
Who said, hey, if I'm going to buy stock into somebody, and like it was like Kincaid. Like Kincaid. Kincaid's the guy. So I just think, like, I go back to that comment even, which is just, you know, very close removed from the stuff we heard from Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott at the end of the year. And I think about that comment and, you know, the fact that he was a first-round pick and they had these injuries and they're going to rely on him and they want that to pay off, that I just believe that they want him to be a real big part of what they do.
Yeah.
So it was Matthew Berry. Also had the comment about Amari Cooper not coming back, probably, in the same article.
Right. That's right.
Which he didn't.
Yeah. That's right. Before we part ways for the day here and for the week, Sal, We opened up today talking about the Dolphins. This news about them maybe being open to trading Jonnu Smith potentially to the Steelers was right as our show started, and we talked through, like, what are the Dolphins up to? Do you want to take a crack at that? Like, I'm not sure they should be in a position to be divesting themselves of good players, but it also, they, I think, are perceived as going the wrong way, and there's been locker room stuff there, and like maybe they just want to clean some guys out and try to an extent start over from that standpoint and still sort of keep going with Tua and Hill and Waddle and everybody.
Yeah, this is just an extension of what I've thought about the Dolphins all offseason, which is I don't think they understand or know what they want to do and what they want to be. Do they want to go for it and be a team that they feel can compete for the playoffs and maybe even a division title, I guess, because they've been down that road and close the last couple of years, and a couple of years ago especially? Or do they want to be a team that, you know, needs to kind of hit the reset button a little bit? I think what complicates matters here, Chris Greer has been at his job a long time. Right. So, like, you know, how many cracks does he get it? I think that he's already had a few. There's been some issues with coaches and quarterbacks, and there's been those kinds of things. And now you got Mike McDaniel, who's been there. He signed a contract extension. Like, I don't know if these guys, they understand they don't really have time to do that. And you have an impatient owner in a lot of ways, probably, who maybe he doesn't even a lot of times people accuse of. It's more about the product off the field or the star power in Miami than it is about winning. There's been accusations of that, you know, that's been floated around. So I think all of that kind of just intersects in a really bad way, to be quite honest with you, the Miami Dolphins. And nobody really knows.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
What they should do or how they should proceed. And I think this is just another example of that.
Very good. Sal, thank you as always.
You got it, guys.
It's our Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Nothing brightens a, what we've become used to, dreary late May day in Buffalo, like the face of Darren Dreger here on Sabres Live. Hi, Dregs. How are you?
Equally dreary here. I'm not going to lie. Last couple of days have been nice. It looked like, okay, we're kicking through spring and summer is right there for us. And, you know, let me just kind of hit a wall of rain over the last 12, 16 hours or so. And it's still kind of that way. I'm supposed to play, my first round of golf tomorrow afternoon.
Where?
Royal Ashburn, which isn't far from my house here. Beautiful.
It used to be known as Thunderbird when I was a wee lad.
Darn right it did. Very nice place. So looking forward to it, but a lot of stuff going on before then and now. And I'm a fair weather guy. If it doesn't improve, I'm not a last second bailer, don't get me wrong, but it's a 1 o'clock tee time. Uh-huh. And if by 11 a.m. it's still looking a bit sketchy, I'm out.
Okay.
That's it. I'm done.
So before we get to, like, you know, more hockey talk or whatever, you're talking about golf. Duffer, I was in studio last week and worked with Dregs, and I found out that Dregs is an avid fisherman. Like, he will go a couple times a week and fish, and his son is even like would go every day. Dregs, we didn't know that from you, that you were an avid fisherman. So are you a fair weather fisherman as well, or is that doesn't matter? You put the rain jacket on and let's go.
Yeah, it depends what the stakes are. If it's just me, you know, I've got a nice setup. I'm not boasting. It's just real. I just slipped down to the dock. My boat is in a lift. So I hit my remote control. I drop the boat into the water. That takes about 40 seconds. I'm in the boat. I'm on the lake and away we go. So, I mean, if it's choppy and it's miserable, I'm not going out unless I'm part of an event, which happens a couple of times this summer. But no, I like to fish. It's anytime you can go catch something, and the walleye on Lake of the Prairies are second to none. Anytime you can go and catch your dinner, clean it up and get it into the pan that quickly. Ah, come on.
It's okay, well, maybe we'll have to get one of those ice box, and you can put those filleted walleye and ship them out here for Duffer and I to put them on the grill the next day. That would work.
I'm good. You can have my share.
I'll take it.
Anything on Bo Byram, JJ Paterka, as we launch into Sabres talk here?
Yeah, you know, I guess I shouldn't be surprised that Paterka's name's out there again. I don't think that there's a whole lot more that's real around JJ Paterka. I know that Kevin Adams and really the Sabres in general were annoyed at that speculation around the trade deadline because it wasn't real. It wasn't, you know, just because somebody calls and asks about a player doesn't automatically mean that that player is on the block or in play, but you can understand the wild speculation around the trade deadline because it happens with every club in the NHL. So I don't have a reason to believe that, you know, anything has shifted there. Now, if JJ Paterka feels like he needs a fresh start, a new opportunity, a better place to perhaps, you know, win and get into the play. I mean, I haven't heard that directly from him, obviously, or the player agent. So I'm skeptical around him. Bo Byram, that's different. That's different. And again, as we talked about last week, we know there's an agent change. Perfect world for Bo Byram would be that the Buffalo Sabres basically shepherd him into unrestricted free agency with a 2-year deal. That seems unlikely. They really like the player. But Byram looks up and he sees Owen Power and he sees Dahlin, and you know, there's a block there from, you know, his perception anyway of being a top guy on an NHL club. And the interest across the league is significant. And that's why Bo Byram, that's legit, man. And we're going to keep talking about this until either they find a way to extend whatever that number looks like in term in the years, or the trade package that Kevin Adams can live with, that he likes, is front and center, and they pull the trigger. That, to me, fellas, seems more likely. A trade seems more likely just because at this point you know that the level of interest is high, and you've got a real good sense that Byram probably doesn't want to go beyond his window between now and free agency, and that doesn't make sense.
Okay, so if Byram trade is more likely than Paterka, I think Byram's a really nice piece, but I don't think he's going to be able to just snatch something that is unexpected from another team.
Right.
Do you think that if there was some Paterka chatter, that maybe you'd be able to go get something that is almost untouchable? Like we had a fan on social media mention, you know, would Paterka be able to snatch a guy like Quinton Byfield from LA? Like, do you think that Paterka is heavy enough in that market to be able to pull something that's untouchable somewhere?
Maybe. That's shooting pretty high, Quinton Byfield, in my opinion, my view. You know, I look at the investment of the LA Kings and everything that they've done to develop Quinton Byfield to a place where he's a key part of the future, right? I mean, Anze Kopitar isn't going to play forever. Yeah. I mean, that's what made this year so important. And part of the reason why Rob Blake just said, okay, I did everything I could to build this team into a top contending team. And so it's time for somebody else to take the reins. Well, we know who that somebody else is. His name is Ken Holland. And I would think that he would look at Quinton Byfield and go, okay, bud, you're a piece that I'm going to build around. Not that you can't with Paterka, but just the investment internally made by the Los Angeles Kings. But to your point, though, Marty, I know you mentioned Byfield by name and the fit that could be in LA. You can look around the National Hockey League and you can see other teams that have struggled a little bit or a lot and go, okay, well, Maybe there's a fit there. Maybe change for the sake of change is a good thing. We'll take your good young player. You take our good young player. And maybe it works out well for both of us. But at this stage, I haven't heard that, and I haven't seen that.
No, that was just a fan's suggestion. He said Byram and Peterka for Byfield and Brent Clark and maybe like
holy
some prospect.
Smokes. Like, do you just want to... like
I have no part of this, Drags. This is Marty just regurgitating.
It's social media driven. Social and I'm media. Just saying, like, no. we want to engage with our fans and have them bring some ideas. But my
okay,
point
but
is
you're
more
a
like,
hockey. You're a sound hockey guy. That's what you do. You analyze it. If you're Ken Holland, are you trading Bo Byram and Peterka for Quentin Byfield and Clark?
No.
Okay.
But my question was more like, can you get something, a big piece out of somewhere with Peterka? Does he have that weight? Like, let's compare Peterka and Matthew Nyes. They're both like in that situation where you can maybe get a contract. Maybe there's an offer sheet. Maybe there's a trade. Like, those are pretty heavy pieces if you want to dangle them out there.
I get it. I do. But this reminds me of the conversations maybe that we didn't have, but you know, and all the speculation again around the Buffalo Sabres was swirling leading up to the trade deadline about Peterka, about this piece, about that piece, all of these things. And Adams didn't flat out deny or dismiss, and you can't, because Buffalo has been in such a state for so long that you have to be willing to listen. And even though the speculation, as we've just gone through, is ridiculous, to be fair, you're okay with those conversations happening publicly, because how can you slam the door on a possibility that you don't know exists? So if that scenario is out there and that general manager goes to Adams and says, I really like JJ Peterka, and here's the top young player that I'm willing to throw into this mix, but I need that player. I'll give you this. In addition, are you interested? All right, well, that's a different conversation. That's a different environment. Yeah. But I just don't think it's happened yet, and I'd be surprised if it happens in the near future.
Can I put all that into more appropriate terms?
Not fantasy land.
How about Peterka for Clark?
Yeah,
I mean, if you're wanting a right shot defenseman, granted, so early on, probably doesn't fit what everybody else is looking for from a right shot defenseman right now. But
no, I get it. And I hear you in a one for one, and it's ish. Very seldom
one
where
for
it's
one ish. There's always going to be adds to it. But
if you're the LA Kings, you know, you're aging out in positions. You know, Drew Doughty isn't going to play forever. And, you know, because of the injury that Doughty sustained, Clark in the last 2 years has really elevated his play at the NHL level, more or less, right?
Yep.
And I would say the same thing of what they've got up front in Los Angeles. But it's not impossible. And if you're Adams, and I feel like now we got to go back to, okay, legitimizing the speculation. Mm-hmm. I don't know what conversations the agent has had with Kevin about JJ Peterka. And if the agent has said to Adams, you know, we're not in this thing long-term with Buffalo, so you may want to start considering. Well, that takes it again into a different territory. And then it becomes more urgent for Adams to have exactly that type of conversation with any of the general managers with like players.
That agent is Alan Walsh, and I'm sure Alan Walsh is saying a lot of different things when he's talking to general managers.
Really?
Good and bad. So, yes, I didn't want you to have to say it. I'm just saying it. That's fine. Injury news. So we have Adam Lowry with the Jets. Hips,
that was a big one,
surgery.
Yeah.
Will be out 5-6 months. So we're talking about November, December. Zach Hyman. We all saw him coming out of the game. He had surgery yesterday. Now, the Oilers don't want to say what it is. They say upper body injury. I think we all can see that it's either wrist or forearm or whatnot.
Yeah.
Wrist has been speculated. Do they
and I believe that's accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. Do they really not want to say anything? Because who knows, maybe if they go to game 7, he could be available with a soft cast and come back.
That's exactly right, Marty. It is. And, you know, and Chris Knobloch acknowledged the, not specifics of the injury, but the injury and the fact that Zach needed surgery to repair it. He certainly made it sound because people reported on the fact that he was done for the season, right?
Yeah.
That was not the messaging that I got from good sources going into that media availability. The message that I got was, I can't share the specifics of the injury. I don't think that's entirely fair. Location, as we've established, yeah, you're right. But the message that I got was if they go deep into the Stanley Cup final, then at this stage, it's really premature, very early, but it's not impossible that Hyman would be back. And, you know, he's irreplaceable. He is. I'm not saying that Edmonton isn't going to win the series in the West. Of course, they could win a Stanley Cup without Hyman, but I expect that Corey Perry is going to play alongside Connor McDavid in game 5 tonight. Mm-hmm. And even though Corey was a great story in game 4, I mean, at 40 years of age, just wild what he's doing. Nah, he's not Zach Hyman. And even rolling guys in like Jones, maybe Jeff Skinner, go down the list, or they go 11-7. It's just a huge, huge loss in not having Hyman there.
Patrick Waugh is staying on as coach of the Islanders. Matthew Darche confirmed that. Can you give us really, really quickly Pittsburgh, Boston, Seattle, and their likely next head coaches?
Well, you know what? Mitch Love is a finalist in all three of those. Isn't that crazy? I mean, it's wild. It is. Lane Lambert of the Toronto Maple Leafs, a finalist in Seattle. Marco Sturm getting a lot of interest from the Boston Bruins. Who else in Pittsburgh? David Quinn interviewed there. Jay Woodcroft interviewed there. But Mitch Love is definitely going to be an NHL head coach next year, whether it's Seattle or Pittsburgh, maybe Boston, don't know. But that guy's getting a lot of love.
Thank you, Dregs.
Have a great weekend,
fellas. Putting a smile on our faces. I love it.
Darren Dreger, our hockey insider from TSN.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.